You're listening to Strictly Business Podcast with Lindsay Williams.
It's Wednesday, so it's time for Wayne on Wednesday with Wayne McCurry from FNB Wealth and Investment, portfolio manager at that institution. Wayne, I saw a tweet of yours, I don't know when it was, about a week ago, and the RAND was blowing out. It was, I don't know, something like 1970, 1980. I don't remember. The numbers are meaningless.
Yeah.
They're so enormous. But you said the RAND eventually, after it blows out, inevitably comes back to its mean. And you were talking about numbers that seem very fanciful of 17 to 1750. Something like that. But here's the RAND, now below 19, 1899,
yeah,
as we speak. So you are absolutely right. What's your reasoning when it comes to that sort of prediction? Yes.
Well, first of all, you know, just on being right in investments is a relative term. Mm-hmm. I think it's too early to call victory now, yeah, but it certainly is moving in the right way. But let's just go back to my interpretation of how the RAND works. Okay, there's three factors that influence the RAND. The longer-term trend is the difference between our inflation and our major trading partners, and that's called the inflation differential.
Right.
That gives you essentially the base of the RAND and the longer-term weakness of the RAND measured on, let's say, a 8 to 10-year time period. That gives you the overall direction of the RAND. So that's the first factor, and that is by far the most important factor.
Yes.
Because all the negatives of South Africa is essentially encompassed in our higher inflation rate versus our major trading partners' inflation. So all the factors that make South Africa uncompetitive essentially comes out in the inflation rate. And I'll come back to that because it's very important.
Yes, it is very important. But before you go on, Wayne, the last year or so, the so-called developed world has caught up with the South African inflation rate. In fact, in the United Kingdom, for example,
we're higher. That's the point I wanted to make.
Yeah.
No, that's the exact point I wanted to make, is that in the last 2 years, our major trading partners' inflation has actually been higher than ours.
Exactly.
But I don't think that that's sustainable, by the way. I don't think so. But for many years, the difference between our inflation and our major trading partners, certainly since the global financial crisis, has been in the order of 4%. That might only go down to 2% going forward, because global inflation has, wherever it settled, is going to be higher than what it was post the global financial crisis. But anyway, that's the overall trend.
Yes.
Then the noise around that trend is by and large determined by the commodity cycle, which is a 6 to 10 year cycle. So when it's very good, and let's just use 2015 to date. 2015, bottom of the commodity cycle, the RAND was trading, I think, somewhere near 17 or 18, somewhere around there in 2015.
Okay.
And it happened to, by the way, coincide with Des van Rooyen becoming the finance minister and ex-President Zuma and firing Nene and all of that. It happened to coincide virtually to the day, interesting enough, at the bottom of the commodity cycle. So the RAND was, let's say, 17. I can't remember and I can't look it up here at the moment.
All right.
You know, then the commodity cycle came along and the RAND went to 13.20.
So from 17 to 13, let's call it. Let's round the numbers up or down a little bit. Yeah, so that's huge.
But fair value was still, let's just round the numbers, 1650. So the RAND went from 1750 or 18 through 1650 to 1320 on the back of the commodity cycle. Then we had global inflation and COVID and all of these other things coming in, and the RAND went from 1320 to 1830, essentially on the back of the commodity cycle. Then South Africa caught up with us, and we had the Lady R and Stage 6 load shedding, and all of a sudden the RAND almost goes to 20. So coming back, the big variant around the long-term fair value range is the commodity cycle. Then you get South Africa that adds to that noise, if you like to call it that. Over time, it actually equates to almost zero. So when you look at When you eliminate inflation out of the RAND and you eliminate the commodity cycle out of the RAND, and you're left with pure noise, of which the most would just be South Africa, you know, our politics, our inefficiencies, our dysfunctional state, our ESKIM, our all of the other, other stuff. Over time, that actually is zero. In other words, some days it's good, some days it's bad. But over time, it actually is zero. So on the rand now, if you evaluate the rand against its fair value, when it almost got to 20 last week or whenever it was, that was the biggest negative gap between fair value and the rand in the last 20 years, if not the last 30 years. So in other words, last week when the rand almost touched 20, it was the cheapest that's ever been relative to its own fair value in 30 years. And what's happening now is people are just buying it because it's too cheap. You know, there was no trigger event the last couple of days. There was nothing changed. Okay, look, surprisingly enough, we don't have any load shedding during working hours anymore. From 6 in the morning till 6 in the evening, there's no more load shedding. It's been like that since Monday.
But that's only three
days.
It's
the third day so far.
That's only 3 days.
Yeah, but it's better than stage 6. Yeah, but it's better than stage 6. At zero, stage 0 is better than stage 6. I'm not saying it's great, but it's better.
Mm.
And that leads me to another point. Myself included, by the way.
Yes.
If anyone in South Africa on Monday last week in stage 6, if anyone in South Africa said, next week there'll be no load shedding from 6 in the morning till 6 in the afternoon, you'd have died laughing. Look, it was inconceivable. And yet, yeah, we are. So, you know, things can change. And sometimes they change for the better. Sometimes they change for the worse, but sometimes they change for the better. So the rand now, it's not going back to its fair value until the commodity cycle turns around. But it can go back to where it was before the Lady R, essentially, because that was the big trigger event, was this.
The Russia thing, yeah.
Love affair, whatever you want to call it, the Russia thing.
Yeah.
And I see they're walking that one back quickly, eh? I mean, I've never heard so much non-aligned voices coming out, and they're walking that one back quickly, this cozying up to Russia story that's being walked back at a rapid pace. In fact, there was even an article yesterday saying that there's a growing movement inside the ANC, which apparently also includes our own state president. Now, this is all rumors. This was an article I read. The basis of the article, I've got no idea whatsoever. But was that, you know, they actually don't want Putin to come here. Now, he'll take that. I don't know. I don't know if it actually matters, by
the way.
He
doesn't take criticism well, let me tell you that.
Yeah. But he hasn't exactly got a big power base. So he hasn't exactly got many friends.
Mm.
You know, so whether you – and as far as Russia is concerned as an economy, it's minuscule. You know, our trade with Russia is – absolutely minuscule. Russia's a very small economy. You know, so, but let's just forget about that.
Yes.
So the rand can come back to 1850, 1830, I don't know, and it can do it quite quickly. You know, it can do that in 2-3 weeks quite easily. But then it's got to sit and wait for lower inflation globally, lower interest rates globally, and the economies to pick up, and demand for commodities to pick up, and there is the commodity cycle turning up before it will go back to its fair value, which is 1650, 17, somewhere around that region. So rand weakness isn't over, but the panic might be over.
Yeah, the panic's over for now. It definitely is. And I'm just looking, you said you couldn't get your graph up with the rand levels. I'm looking at the commodity cycle now. January 2016, and this is the Commodity Research Bureau Index of a basket of dozens of commodities. Okay, it went to, in January 2016, 160, in the low 160s. April 2020, and that was the COVID, at the height of the COVID scare.
Yeah.
And it went down to the 130s. From that, from 130... as an index, it went to 350 in May of 2022. So nearly three times what it was in April 2020. Yep. 2 years later, it went up threefold. And today it's 289. Yep. So where it goes from here, I don't know. But that, as you quite rightly say, is key. Yep. One of the key elements of the Rand's fortune.
It's key for South Africa.
Yes.
Correct. It is absolutely key for South Africa.
Mm.
And essentially, it's inflation differentials. and a commodity cycle. The South African noise around it is not, it's not that massive, to be honest. It's not, over time, it actually, surprisingly enough, amounts to zero. So it'll be very influential in the shorter term, let's say on a 1 year, 6 months, 1 year basis, either positive or negative. And, you know, people forget the positive when President Ramaphosa was elected as the leader of the ANC.
Ramaphoria.
There was massively positive. Mm. Yeah, Ramaphoria. There was massively positive movement on the rand. So it's not all negative, you know, the stories. But, you know, if you take the commodity cycle, I'm called up mine now, which is the, I don't know which index it is, but it's only industrial commodities. So the big one there is copper.
Okay.
You know, the peak in 2021 after COVID was 250, is now 150. You know, so there's been a massive downward movement in commodity prices. And if you take that and you just, I actually got my data now, and you plot the rand against it, the cycles are virtually identical. You know, if you actually put the inverse of the rand, because for some reason, I've never quite understood it, we quote, we're one of the few countries in the world, as far as I understand, that actually quotes its currency the wrong way around.
Yes, people, you know, talk about the rand dollar. Yes,
rand equals 5 US cents.
Yeah, yeah.
So then when the rand falls, the graph goes down. Whereas now when the rand falls, the graph goes up, which is odd. So if you put the two things together on the same chart, the turns in the rand, either positive or negative, is a virtual carbon copy of the commodity cycle.
Okay.
It's a virtual carbon copy. So the rand in the shorter term is driven by the commodity cycle, and we're in the down cycle now. So rand strength is quite normal at the moment. The extent went crazy. So the collapse from 1830 to 1980, wherever it got to, that was South Africa. That was, as we said a few times before, Russia and load shedding and.
Yes.
So, you know, when something is terribly cheap or terribly expensive, there is sometimes a trigger event that causes it to close that valuation gap. And people often think that that's the reason why it's doing it. It's not. That's just the trigger event that made it happen on a certain day. The reason why something's going up is because it was too cheap, or the reason why something's falling is it was too expensive. Richemont's a good example. Richemont's been fantastic share, but it got to seriously overvalued levels. And all of a sudden, one day it starts falling and people start looking for a reason. The reason why it's falling is it was expensive. So, I mean, and there might be trigger events on the rand. Yeah, there could very easily be trigger events on the rand. And that could be the GDP number, even though it was pathetic, was better than people thought, with, you know, the fully blown load shedding. The economy actually grew. It didn't shrink, you know, which surprised everyone because, you know, when you're sitting with, you know, without one day's respite in that whole quarter of load shedding, there wasn't one single day's respite. It was either four or six. Stage four, stage six. You know, people have said, how on earth can the economy have grown? Yet it grew. So maybe that was the trigger event that caused the rand to start strengthening. But the reason why it's strengthening, it was just too oversold.
Yeah, I think the GDP number was 0.4% increase, which was a surprise because people are thinking it's going to be a contraction.
Yes.
At best, flat for the year. Maybe
minus one, yeah.
Exactly. I'm just looking at the copper price, which is interesting because you sparked my interest there. Back in 2022, it was nearly $5 a pound. It's now about $3.75, $3.80 per pound at the moment. So it's quite a big fall percentage-wise, and that's an important thing.
Yeah, but more important for South Africa, call up the palladium price.
Okay, I'm going to do so. You carry on talking while I do that.
Yeah, I've got it here quickly now. So palladium peaked at $3,000 an ounce. It's 1.4 now, eh?
Yeah.
And this is a big export for South Africa. And you can put up coal as well. The coal shows the same. You can put up iron ore. It shows, I mean, iron ore got to, you know, iron ore is a big export of ours, you know, when we can get it to the coast, to the harbor. Because that doesn't seem to happen all that often because of Transnet, but I come back to Transnet.
Sorry, coal. You're stuck at 109 at the moment, down 26% on the year. Rhodium is down 56% on the year, by the way.
Yeah, no, I'm not getting
that. Palladium is down 28% on the year, 1407 at the moment, and down nearly 10% on the month.
Yeah, so in other words, the point is, we're in a commodity down cycle.
Okay. If there's going to be a recession in the United States of America, which people are talking about, and the depth of the recession, if they are right, is up for debate, up for argument. If there is going to be a recession, then commodity prices will surely, in the traders' minds, in the investors' minds, go lower, even though in the minds of the...
It could well be, but you must remember, I find it very interesting, this whole how people's minds work. Either traders or actually people who use commodities. You know, you've always got a stockpile in your factory. And you try and keep that stockpile level relatively constant unless you foresee a price change. So if you think the price is falling, you will maybe halve your stockpile because you could buy it cheaper tomorrow. Yeah. You think the price is falling. So when prices start to fall, demand, let's just say, I mean, simplistically, you keep 1 month stock at your factory of iron ore. But you can get daily supplies if you need to. So in that month where you think the prices are falling, let's just say you buy 1 ton a month and you've got a 1 ton stockpile. That next month where you think the price is falling, you drop your stock by half. In other words, that month, you only buy half a ton of iron ore. So when prices are falling, the demand is not constant. In other words, you don't still buy your 1 ton that month because you're going to drop your stockpile. You only buy half a ton, even though you're still using 1 ton. Then when prices go up, people say, I'm not going to have 1 month stock. I'm going to have 2 months stock because it might be more expensive tomorrow. So when prices go up, your demand can easily in the shorter term double because people want to buy it before the price goes up more. So because people are anticipating price movements, the actual physical buying and selling can vary enormously in the shorter term. And that's why prices go up quickly and fall quickly, is that it's not just, you know, people just aren't buying their normal monthly purchase. They're either buying less because they think it's going to be cheaper tomorrow, or they're buying more because they think it's going to be more expensive tomorrow. So that's why you get these wild movements in the oil price and in all commodities, is because of that factor. But yeah, it's actually very interesting that the rand has strengthened, because I didn't think it would do it so quickly. I still thought there'll be a lot more. We needed more time before the rand would actually go back.
What interests me about the rand?
Days,
exactly. What interests me about the rand is that the euro dollar today, for example, is 107.15, and that is a euro that is 0.3% stronger against the US dollar, and yet the rand has shown independent strength by rallying 1% against the US dollar. The dollar has fallen 1%. So it was currently 19.07. It was in the 1890s earlier on. So something's going on there, whether it be bargain hunting, whether it be some big deal that we don't know about, and a lot of rand dollars have come in. Who knows?
In the shorter term, literally in the shorter term, the rand could go back to 1970. Who knows shorter term? I mean, who honestly knows shorter term?
What I am seeing, Wayne,
is in 2 or 3 years' time, I still think it'll be below 17.
Okay, in that case, I shall write that down. Wayne McCurry, what's the date today? 7th of June 2023. Rand will be in a couple of years' time, 17 approximately. I'm not going to hold you to the numbers. Okay, I've written it down. And if you're still in the business, and if I'm still in the business...
No, you can hold me to the numbers because, I mean, this is what I get paid to do, is to make calls like that. And,
good.
You know, sometimes you're right, sometimes you're wrong.
Okay, Wayne, what I am seeing is some bargain hunting on the South African market. I'm also seeing the S&P suddenly around about 4,300. And I think to myself, that's towards the top end of the range. Before, it's been sort of in the mid-range for a while. Suddenly people are coming for the S&P 500. I know it's June, I know conditions are slightly thin potentially, but it's suddenly edging up. And I'm looking at a couple of stocks today, Spar and Thungela, for example. One is a retailer, one is a digger. And I see big moves to the upside, and I'm saying, I think of you whenever I see South African stocks going up, because they're both South African stocks. One obviously has an international bias because of the fact that it's the coal price that is important here.
Yes.
But people seem to be bargain hunting, Wayne.
Yeah, there's definitely an element of bargain hunting. SPAR is just pure bargain hunting. The commodity shares are on the back of the US this week, probably won't raise interest rates, and the next move is down. So the shares will be anticipating the next cycle. You know, and that's why I've been going on and on for a sustained time period now about commodity shares and how much I like them.
Yeah, and you've done well, I think, on the PGM stocks. Well, you did, yes, in the initial stages anyway. They're not going to go up in a straight line. Wayne, let's talk about food now. What's your attitude towards the eat as much as you like offer at certain restaurants? Do you ever do that?
Yes, but I don't tend to eat that much. You know, despite my girth, I actually don't eat a huge volume of food at any one particular setting. My true downfall is chocolates, you know. But so let me tell you a story. We took all of our mates to a sushi place in Bryanston, for 230 rand a person, you can have as much as you like. They haven't just got sushi. They've also got a set menu that's included in that all-in price.
Yeah.
So you can get the stir fry and the soup and the spring rolls and the pudding and the bow ties. And then you can get sushi. And the sushi menu was very nice. I mean, they had a crab salad there that is – all their stuff is freshly made. When you order it, they make it. And this crab salad was – absolutely delicious.
You know it's not crab. You know it's not crab, don't you? Sorry to interrupt.
It's
reconstituted fish, and they color it and to make it look like crab.
They put a flavor in it.
Exactly.
But it still, nevertheless, was delicious. So there was, and they only got two rules. There's obviously no takeaways. And secondly, finish your plate before you order the next plate.
Exactly.
And that's fine. So, yes. I have gone to the buffet, you know, eat as much as you like buffet type of thing. But personally, I don't actually eat all that much volume of food at any one particular sitting.
So why are you overweight then?
I eat chocolate, that's why.
How much do you weigh, if you don't mind me asking?
Oof, 93, 94
kgs. And how tall are you?
I don't know in centimetres, but... 5'11", about.
Yeah, that's a
bit. I am distinctly overweight. I'm not grotesquely overweight.
No.
But I'm not exactly slim.
Okay, so you're 93, 94 kilograms and you're below 6 foot. Okay.
Yeah.
Then you're around about the same sort of body mass as me, because I'm one.
But you're a bit taller though.
Oh, so yeah, I'm 6 foot five, 194, yeah, 195, whatever
taller.
It is, but I'm 110, which is horrible. I hate it.
Yeah.
My whole wardrobe is completely obsolete
now.
I actually
went out last night for dinner with two good friends of mine, both ex-colleagues of mine.
Yeah.
And the one chap's he's much younger than us. He's not a youngster, but he's younger than us. He's 48, 49.
Right.
And then the other chap we went out to dinner with is... he's a year older than me. He's 65. And me and the older guy were chatting, and he's also put on a couple of kilograms over the years.
Yeah.
But we were chatting because we were having a very nice dinner, and we were chatting. He would say, you know, what the hell if you've picked up a few kilograms in your older years?
Yeah, so what?
You enjoy food. We both enjoy food. So, you know, tough. Essentially.
The reason I asked this, and this is very interesting that you mentioned sushi, is that I saw my son for the first time for around about 5 years. He's moved to the Netherlands, and we had a good night out. There were three of us. I got a Japanese sushi takeaway, all sorts of different things. And it came to 96 euros, including tip. And I thought, okay, well, that's fine. And yeah, we ate well. But they have this particular restaurant that I order from, which I favour, has a 31 euro per person eat as much as you like deal. You get 2 hours, and every 10 minutes you can order as many, well, certain amount of dishes, but you have to finish them before you go on to the next ones. And I thought, that's a really good, really good deal. But would I make myself, would I avail myself of that offer to monetary satisfaction, if you see what I mean? In other words, would I get better value? I don't know, because I'm not gluttonous. Like, you're not gluttonous. You like food, but you're not a pig.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
Now look, the only time I really took big advantage of a eat as much as you like was there was a fantastic prawn restaurant, and I don't know why they closed down. It was a chain restaurant called Jimmy's Killer Prawns, and I think the only one I know of that's still open is in Bloemfontein.
Gosh.
Because they're all closed in Joburg. Yeah, they're now Jimmy's Killer Fish or Jimmy's Killer something else, but they're not Jimmy's Killer Prawns. And Jimmy's Killer Prawns were top class.
Yeah.
There's maybe only two places that beat Jimmy's Killer Prawns, and the one is the Honey Rock Motel. Fantastic prawns. And the other one is Ocean Basket. Ocean Basket prawns are fantastic. Anyway, so Jimmy's Killer Prawns once had a special on, and it was like every Tuesday or something, where eat as much as you like. So my friend John and I used to go there quite often. Now, John, I don't want to be derogatory towards John, but John can eat.
Okay.
He can eat.
Okay.
The amount of food he consumes is only limited by the availability of the food, not by the state of his hungriness or fullness.
Okay.
He's quite unique in this respect. Anyway, so we went to Jimmy's Killer and we charred prawns. And then eventually we said, no, we actually can't eat anymore. Now we are both full. We just can't eat anymore. And the waiter came up to us and said, do you guys want any more? And we said, no, we can't do any more now. And his answer to us was, are you here to eat prawns or what?
Ah, so it's a challenge.
We ordered another 12, and not each, we ordered another 12, and we flattened just to prove a point. And it was also very interesting. This was maybe 15 years ago, so quite a few years ago. But at one stage in Joburg, prawns were substantially cheaper than a steak. Prawns were actually very good value. So you didn't even think twice about ordering prawns when you went out, because it was actually cheaper than buying a nice, you know, a 300-gram steak. Not anymore, unfortunately.
No, of course not.
You know, so a nice helping of prawns. Look, I know it's cheap if you convert it into pounds or euros or dollars, but a nice helping of prawns that you are fairly satisfied after eating it is 340 rand, 350 rand. You know, whereas a good steak is 200 rand, I don't know, somewhere around there.
I'm just looking up Jimmy's Killer Prawns now on the internet as we speak. And it says here that there's a Jimmy's Killer Prawns in Norwood, Johannesburg. Were you aware of this?
No, I don't know about that. No, I didn't. I don't know about that. Then I must go and have a look. Because all the Jimmy Killer Prawns, and there were a few of them, all the ones I knew, closed.
Okay.
Which was a great sadness.
That's very great.
But lucky enough, I found the Honey Rock Motel, which is just around the corner from my garage in Kaya Sands.
Mm.
And it is a fantastic place. And one of the nice things about the Honey Rock, I went there last Friday, is I went in my garage clothes. You know, my garage outfit, which is not, it's not a pretty sight. It's got burn holes in it and paint on it. And it's, you know, it's a proper garage outfit.
Yeah.
And no one even blinked. No, I was just regular Joe there in my garage outfit, which I found fantastic, in fact.
You must look this up, actually. Jimmy's Killer Prawns Fordsburg was founded on the 28th of November 2005, but there's one that seems to be a going concern in Norwood. Okay. And there's also Jimmy's Killer Fish and Chips. That's what you were talking about. Jimmy's Killer
Fish and Chips. That's the one I'm talking about, the Jimmy's Killer Fish and Chips.
Yeah, that's going now. Okay, jolly good.
But Jimmy's Killer, that particular branch might have only been opened in 2004 or whatever, but Jimmy's Killer was big in the 90s, eh?
Yeah, I remember it. I do remember it. Okay, gosh, now I'm hungry again. But you must be careful about the prawns that you buy. There are certain ones. I mean, I'm not being derogatory here, but the ones from, I think there's ones from a Southeast Asian country. Is it Bangladesh, I think? And you've got to check how many years they've been sitting in the freezer.
In the freezer, yeah.
Yeah. Do you remember the old Mozambican prawns, Wayne?
Yes, very much. A good friend of mine, a school friend of mine. This is now, this is in the 80s now, sort of mid-80s.
Yes.
He took a job with the old Lonro in Mozambique.
Okay.
Now remember Lonro? Lonro in its day was a big company. They were in agriculture. They were in platinum. They were in construction. They actually built the Four Ways Mall. There was a very big company when Tiny Roland was still around bribing African leaders. Yeah, he was quite a character. But anyway, that's not the point of the conversation. He went to Mozambique to work for Lonro. And it was in the height of the inflation when inflation was 1,000% during the civil war in Mozambique. And it was interesting chatting to him because you literally had to pay people that day. Otherwise, the price went up 20% the next day because inflation was so high. And he said the coins, you know, the coins were just tossed in the street because they had absolutely no value. And people, it was like the Weimar Republic after the First World War in Germany. You know, you were paid in sacks of money, in you know, wheelbarrow loads of money. But anyway, the point was,
yes,
he used to come back to Joburg on the odd weekend from Mozambique, and he used to bring prawns in his little ice pack, little carrier bag ice pack, and he used to go to his house and have prawns. And he said in Mozambique, he said they were for nothing. You bought them literally for nothing. So he had prawns. But another interesting fact that he told me about his sojourn there in Mozambique at the time, he said, you know, the power is unreliable. You've got to have your own generator. And I still thought, how awful it must be to live like that.
How can you live in a country that's got no... In fact, Wayne,
no reliable power.
I went to Mozambique for New Year's Eve 1988 for some extraordinary reason, which need not detain us now. And Frelimo and Renamo, I think it was, if I'm getting my factions
that's
correct,
right, yeah,
they were still at loggerheads. So it was still a country embroiled in a civil
war.
Yeah,
still civil war, yeah.
And I went, they bombed the local power station, but I went to a place and I had prawns, and I've never seen such prawns.
No,
prawns the size of
delicious
puppies. They were absolutely incredible. And despite the fact there was no power, they still managed to cook them, and it was so delicious. But the Russians, you know, used to dredge up the prawn beds and ship the prawns back to Russia for fertilizer. That's what I heard. And that's why they're so degraded now.
It's quite possible, yeah. It's quite possible. And two stories. I went to Mozambique after the Civil War to the Palana Hotel that had just been refurbished.
Okay.
And that's a very long story by itself.
Mm.
But anyway, the one evening we all went to the Casa de Sol, the original Casa de Sol that was still from the Portuguese colonial days. It's still going strong, and had prawns there, and they were fantastic, absolutely fantastic. And then once as a youngster, I think in about 1966 or something, I was only 6-7 years old, my parents were great caravanners. We traveled the whole of South Africa and even Southern Africa in our caravan.
Okay.
And the one every year, look, normally you'll go to some place on the river in the Northern Cape, you know, some place on the Vaal River in the Northern Cape for your caravan excursion. But then once a year they had a big excursion, and the one year was to Lorenzo Marx in those days. And we got those big octagonal, that might have even been like 2 kilograms of cashew nuts. Now, cashew nuts were unobtainable in South Africa in the 60s. And even if they were around, they were horrendously expensive. So I'd never eaten a cashew in my life before. And you could go and buy, I still remember, this big octagonal tin with a round cap in the middle of the tin that you popped open. And you could buy it for nothing. Oh, it was just too delicious for words. I'd never eaten. I still like cashew nuts today. but I'd never had cashew nuts before, and it was spectacular.
We must share Mozambique stories, but we can't at the moment because I've got to go. But Wayne, thank you very much for your insight on the markets and also food. Prawns and cashews, we must talk about them. That's Wayne McCurry, who's a portfolio manager at F&B Wealth and Investment in Johannesburg. And that was Wayne on Wednesday. The views and opinions expressed in these podcasts are those of Lindsay Williams and various contributors and do not reflect the policy, position or opinion of any other agency, organisation, employer or company associated with strictlybusinesspodcast.com. Assumptions made on the analyses are not reflective of the position of any other entity other than the speaker or the author. And since we are critically thinking human beings, these views are always subject to change, revision and rethinking at any time. Please do not hold us to them in perpetuity.